Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Autism is a hot topic today, surrounded by a lot of controversy. So we're going to get some expert advice on a form of autism called Asperger's syndrome with my guest, Stephanie Holmes. She's a certified autism specialist and a Christian counselor. And this is a really personal topic for Stephanie because her oldest daughter was diagnosed with Asperger's in 2004. Stephanie has a burden to help special needs students and families deal with the frustrations and challenges that having a special needs child brings. Here's our interview. Stephanie, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start us out by talking about the difference between autism and an autism spectrum disorder?
Okay. Well, currently in our current diagnostic system with the DSM-4, you'll see that there are different categories. You have autism and then you have Asperger's. Now, things are about to change with the DSM-5, where they're going to just kind of streamline it and call everything autism spectrum disorder. So when you think of a spectrum disorder, you're thinking of the various symptoms happening on a spectrum. So from child to child, sensory issues or stimming behaviors or the various things that are outlined are going to range differently, like on a spectrum. So no two children with autism experiencing the same, quote, symptom may manifest it the same. It'll manifest just differently, like you're looking at it on a spectrum.
Okay. And what are the signs of an autism spectrum disorder? That would be the Asperger's.
Yes. My specialty tends to be more on what we're calling the higher functioning part of autism. Right now it's being called Asperger's. The DSM-5 is going to get rid of that term. Now for me, forever and always, I'm going to continue to use the term Asperger's because the rest of the world is going to continue to use the Asperger's since the rest of the world does not use the DSM-5. But Asperger's and falling under autism spectrum, it is a developmental disorder, and Asperger's is characterized by severely impaired social skills, repetitive behaviors, a narrow set of interest or special interest, some sensory processing issues, and usually when we're thinking in Asperger's, most of these kids, not all, but most of them don't tend to have cognitive delays or language delays. They tend to have kind of charted developmentally as far as the big things we look at in parents. Their walking and talking and all of that tends to develop normally. It's the social, emotional piece that is the pervasively behind.
So when would we notice that in a child? Like what age do you see something like that then?
Really with Asperger specifically, you might not even notice that they're, you know, you might think most parents, I know, including myself, you're looking at your 3 and 4 year old thinking, wow, they're really precocious and smart and intelligent and organized, and you're not really maybe picking up on signs. It's not really till you start specifically with Asperger's to see how the child is interacting amongst their peers that you start to kind of get a clue something may be different. And for most kids, that's going into kindergarten, first grade, second grade. Now, for Asperger individuals, we're finding that the average age that they're getting a diagnosis for boys is between the age of 8 and 11, and for girls, not even until after the age of 12, so more middle school. So until you really start to kind of look at them side by side with their peers, it may not be intuitively obvious that something is wrong socially.
Wow. As a Christian counselor, how did you become passionate about working with special needs kids?
To be honest, when I started out, you know, and thinking ahead of being a Christian counselor, autism and special needs, they were not even on my radar. My only knowledge of the word autism is like most people in America. That was the introduction of the word in the 1980s film with Rain Man. And up until that point in time in my life, I didn't even know such a thing existed. I certainly had never met anyone with it, didn't even know a friend of a friend, you know, someone with autism. And when I went into counseling, I saw myself as a marriage and family therapist and just saw a different future in my practice. What changed in my career was when my own daughter became diagnosed with Asperger's when she was 6 years old. And there was no indication for us at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5 that there were any kind of issues. We have about a 4-year age difference between the two children. So we just thought, you know, this is a really bright, really precocious child. You know, when you have that one child, they spend a lot of the time in adult world. So her vocabulary was great. She was reading at the age of 3. So we just thought we had this super intelligent child.
And your doctor never noticed anything?
No. In fact, the pediatrician was like, wow, this girl is so smart. You should put her in Montessori school. And we had to make a decision because her birthday fell in October. Do we want her to be the oldest in the class or the youngest in the class? And the doctor's like, oh, you need to let her be the youngest in the class because she's so smart. You know, she needs to be intellectually challenged. So we made the decision to kind of push ahead versus hold back. That did kind of help us get the diagnosis a little bit quicker because then we saw in kindergarten and trying to, you know, go through the things that kindergartners have to do, which she was even in a really small Christian school that only had 4 kids in the class. And there were maps when we started to see the problems, the meltdown, the it's time to change from art time back to school time, and she couldn't handle the transition. She might run out of the classroom or get underneath a desk and refuse to come out, or if the teacher tried to, you know, pull her out from underneath the desk, she might spit on the teacher or hit the teacher. And we were experiencing nothing like that at home. I mean, if you would have asked us, we had, you know, the perfect child. She's very routine and very structured, and she puts herself to bed, and she eats at normal times. And until she got in that school setting where there was that pressure and transition and peer interaction, that's kind of when the issue came to light for us. And as a girl, most girls don't tend to be aggressive, the Asperger girls, but she tended to be pretty aggressive, but only when really stressed out in that school setting. We never saw any aggression at our home because she was involved in our home church, and she, you know, went to nursery and went to children's church and loved it and never saw that manifest there. But in that school setting where it's time to change and it's time to go outside and it's time to share the toy, that's where the deficits really came to light. And she ended up being expelled from kindergarten.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we had to really go, okay, what's going on? Because the school was trying to tell me, you know, she's just a bad kid. She's oppositional defiant. But something inside was saying, no, I've seen this little girl's heart. She will share if it's her idea. She does care about other people. She does have good behavior. So that, believe it or not, that little film, that Rain Man film, I was like, there's got to be a higher functioning form of that, because sometimes I see kind of behaviors like that, and they're telling me that's kind of what some of the behaviors are when they change. And so something kind of clicked in my head, and I went looking through my DSM-4 and found Asperger's and thought, this could be what it is. So then that kind of account our research. What is Asperger's? How does it manifest, especially in a girl? Because supposedly it's 10 to 1, boys to girls. So that really started my change, my passion, and looking at especially the higher end of the spectrum, because I really had to understand her and I had to help her. That just really led to me seeing there are a lot more kids out there who need help more than just my daughter.
Yeah. What did you find most challenging about dealing with the Asperger's with your own daughter?
I really found the biggest issue was other people's ignorance. You know, as a family, my family support system, my parents, my husband's parents, were a great support system to us. So we didn't have to deal with what some people deal with when other people in the family, you know, don't want to deal with your child or don't want to support you. We had a great support system. But our biggest challenge was the educational system. Our biggest challenge was other people's ignorance, because if you were to see a picture of my daughter before I knew she had any issues, I used to have her do little pageants, and she placed in these pageants. So very beautiful, long blonde hair, big blue eyes, so intelligent. And when you look at her, you would say she's just, you know, acting out. She's just having a temper tantrum. So because her disability, in quotes, is kind of hidden, and she, quote, looks normal, when she would manifest a behavior, whether it be at the grocery store or even at church, and other people, quote, tried to help me parent my child, that was a huge problem. And in the school system, they really struggle with these children who have high intelligence but low social IQ. They just seem to think, you know, well, they're so smart. You know, your daughter has 149 IQ. She should just be getting this. She should just understand it's time to go from math to science. She just needs to understand it's time to come in, or she just needs to understand it's time to share. She's smart enough. And they really don't understand the difference between intellectual intelligence and social intelligence, because they would get an F if a test was on social intelligence, common sense, empathy, understanding people, reading people. They don't get that. So the educational system in elementary school especially, she was expelled kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and third grade, all because of ignorance of them seeing it as a behavior disorder instead of a social communication neurological development disorder.
How did that affect her?
It was very hard for her, especially when she was expelled from the two Christian schools, especially using the words naughty and sin that came from the Christian worldview perspective. The one school that she attended was actually connected to the church where my family was the founding member of that church.
Oh, lovely.
And when she got expelled from that school setting, when the principal had told her he would never, ever, ever under any circumstances expel her because we are your church, we are your family, we love you, there's nothing you can do that would ever make me expel you. And then in that March, when she got expelled, it's like her behavior went from 0 to 100. She didn't even have, she tells me now, she's in ninth grade, she said, when my own church kicked me out, she said, I felt like if I wasn't good enough for my church, I wasn't good enough for God.
Oh, how heartbreaking.
So what could I do? There's nothing I can do that's good enough. So why should I even try to hold it together anymore? Why should I try to do my best, because people have already made up their mind about me? And that was a huge struggle with depression and anxiety. She had to go through counseling. She had to go through some psychotropic medication. Those thoughts were really difficult for her because she didn't understand. Someone broke their word. Someone who also, you know, happened to be a pastor broke their word to her, and she really started associating that with God and the church and pastor, all of that together. So that was a very difficult time for her, for our family. And in talking with her now and some of the things she writes now to try to help me understand what she was thinking back then, and even as a ninth grader, there's still some residue of that rejection, but she's come so much further in her own identity in Christ, which is what we're constantly working on. You know, we've overcome that, but that was a huge struggle. Every time she got kicked out of a school was just one more reinforcement to her
that she was
wasn't
bad.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Right, and you're bad. And she went from mainstream into an autism seclusion class, back to mainstream, and then they put her in a behavior disorder class. And the teachers even referred to it as the bad kid class.
Oh, great.
You know, and they would say, you're never getting out of here. You're in here forever. You're mine now. And they had these, like, New York cop style ways of dealing with these children. And some of these children really did have some major behavior disorders, but my daughter had autism. And you put that in that kind of setting where do this or do that, and if you roll your eyes at me and they, you know, pull her out of the chair and, you know, put her on the floor like a drug bust, that's not the proper way to treat a third grader with autism.
No.
So you start adding all of that on top of the constant expulsions, constantly not feeling good about yourself. I mean, she developed such social anxiety about going to school. It was a knockdown drag out every morning to get her in the car because she didn't know what was going to happen. Are they going to lock me in the closet today? Are they going to put me on the floor and rub my face in the floor today? Are they going to shove me in a corner? Are they going to take my paper? Are they going to take my lunch? It was kindergarten through third grade was a very horrible experience for our entire family. I mean, even for the grandparents, you know, hearing these stories of their grandchild, you know, having a rug burn all over their face, where their face was rubbed in the carpet for punishment.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
Stephanie,
it was very difficult to process all of this stuff. And me trying to be a Christian, I'm like, okay, what's the Christian thing to do? I got to protect my child, but I don't really think I should sue the school system, but I got to get her out of this situation, but I got to protect her. But there, you know, it was just this, it was a horrible, horrible 4 years.
And a ripple effect into your whole family, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Your marriage.
Yeah. It causes multiple stressors. There was a point in time in third grade, they would not allow her to come to school unless my husband and I would stay the day with her. So, you know, he had a job and I had a job. So we were constantly, it's your turn. No, I went to third grade. You get to go to third grade. And he would set up his laptop and, you know, he'd be there to discipline if there was an issue, or I took duty after 12. So it really got involved in our careers. It involved our whole family, plus another sibling who gets born, and she has her own special needs with hearing and speech, and she has her therapies, and then just living in the volatility of it all. So it really disrupted the family functioning for a while when we didn't really have a really good grasp of that. But really, I feel like had we not had such opposition from the school system, and you know, if we would have had some help there, that could have really helped our whole situation better, because she was so impacted by what these teachers were telling her about her. That really increased the behavior as well, plus the anxiety to getting it. It was like this horrible cycle until I decided to pull her out in fourth grade to homeschool her just to give her a break, you know, from that system. And then things really started to settle down. But I really feel like if the school system would have been more educated and would have been more helpful, they could have come alongside as a resource to us. But they've kind of came across as opposition and enemy far more than helpful 9 out of 10 times.
What do these kids need, Stephanie? How do parents come alongside? How does the school come alongside and help these kids with the skill deficit?
Well, the number one thing that I'm extremely passionate about is getting the right diagnosis. And if there is something that has become a pet peeve, if I can use that phrase, is parents who, you know, I talk to, or they get input, you know, somewhere in their system that maybe their child is on the spectrum. Well, I don't want my child labeled with that. You know, I don't want my kid to have that label. And so the number one thing is proper diagnosis. Because you cannot get anything in the school system without a diagnosis. You can't just walk in and say, I think my kid has something on the autism spectrum, and expect the school system to do anything. So the number one thing is proper diagnosis. And right now, the statistics were just released, and we won't debate the origin and all of that great stuff, but 1 out of 50 school kids in America is on the autism spectrum. So diagnosis is number one, the most important thing. Once that diagnosis is there, and often these kids are misdiagnosed, the number one thing to know about autism is it always has a secondary diagnosis of either ADHD, obsessive compulsive, oppositional defiant, and sometimes reactive attachment. But those things tend to be diagnosed first. So at 5 years old, if a child's diagnosed ADHD, and then, okay, we've got medication and we've got a handle on it, but really it's autism and ADHD, there's a whole different dynamic going on there. So in getting that proper diagnosis, you'll understand better how to help the child. So when they get the diagnosis, the children on the spectrum, they need many things. In school, they might need the smaller setting. They might need extra time on tests and quizzes. they really need the teacher to be understanding of things like sensory issues. They need the teacher to be able to prepare them for transitions, because these children can be taught. They like pattern and routine. And if you can just prepare them sometime in 5 minutes, you know, we're getting ready to transition, or in 5 minutes, we're getting ready to come in from recess. Just some basic things to help them with transitions. They definitely are going to need some occupational therapy. Occupational therapy, you can hire your own, which is what we did, or the school system, if they have that as one of their things, to help them with their sensory issues. Because these kids are either on high alert, meaning they're very aversive to sensory stuff, or they're sensory seeking. And that's where you see the kind of ADHD. They're climbing on everything, touching everything, licking everything, the sensory seeking. So getting some help with the sensory issues can help them. A lot of them also tend to have fine motor skills. So you're thinking about just writing with a pencil and manipulating all the things you have to do in elementary school. They need some help with their fine motor skills. They also need social skills training. This is a huge, huge thing. I'll never forget when I was working with my daughter when she was in fourth grade, I bought a lot of books on social skills training because I thought, you know, this is something she's going to need for the rest of her life. And I was sitting there with her, and we were going through some of these books, and she looked at me and she said, "Mommy, do you remember when your mommy sat down and taught you about social skills?" I was like, "No, honey, I didn't have to be taught these. Somehow I just knew this." And it was really baffling to her that she hadn't picked up, that other people in the world just pick up on these things.
Well, you know, it's that whole emotional coaching piece. I was talking to Dr. Sipsy about that, and this idea of flexibility, problem solving, all those social skills, executive learning skills that these kids really need to be taught and coached. They need empathy. They need, you know, parents to be assertive, but they still need parents to be that safe, base, secure haven. And it sounds like for your daughter, bless your heart, none of that was in place those first 3 years at school. She was getting, you know, beat up by the teachers.
Right, verbally and emotionally, yeah. And then just constantly put down. And you bring up an excellent point. Dr. Sipsy's material is one of the things I used during her fourth grade year. You know, everyone had been telling me, you know, Strong Will Child and Dare to Discipline, which are great books for strong will children, but not for autistic children.
Exactly.
I had, because I'm a member of the AACC, I had bought Caring for Kids and Teens God's Way, and I was kind of happenstance, but I think God's will. I happened to be doing that, and Dr. Sipsy had all the stuff about the emotional dysregulation, and I was like, you know what, I've tried everything else. And so I got a hold of some of his materials, and back then I'd even contacted him online and gotten some more information for him, and he had written me back. And his system of working on that emotional dysregulation piece was one of the key things that helped turn her around. And it was part of our fourth grade curriculum when I was homeschooling. After we got done with all the academics, we worked on social skills. And then we worked on this emotional dysregulation and anxiety and how to understand when your body's feeling anxious and how to bring yourself down. And it was really then I wanted to coach her on coping skills and coping strategies, and because they have a mind division, they're kind of the last ones to know that they're upset. You know, to us, it looks like it came on so suddenly, but that could have been building for 3 days. And they don't have the tools to understand. Their stomach started giving them that queasy feeling 2 days ago, and that sweaty hands and that racing heartbeat, that means you're anxious. They don't get that.
They don't get that, yeah. They don't pick up on some of these things.
Right. So I'm glad you brought up Dr. Sipsy's material, because that was crucial.
Well, the other thing I think is important to note for parents is that, and you experience this with the teachers, parents often get frustrated that they don't know what the diagnosis is if they don't recognize it on the front end of things. And so they're yelling and screaming and freaking out and thinking they can, you know, discipline and punish and all those things, when that's not what this particular child needs. That's not going to work for this child, because the more dysregulated the parent's emotion is, then that teaches the kid to act out even more.
Exactly. And it causes this kind of terrible cycle. I was just at a conference last fall with Dr. Tony Atwood, and in the Asperger field, he is world-renowned. And he was talking about, he said, you know, we always say Asperger kids don't have empathy skills. He said, you're wrong. He said, they don't know how to process and communicate their empathy. He said, but they have this sixth sense in people. They can pick up on your negative feelings like anger and anxiety. And when they get in tune to that, it raises their anxiety off the chart. So when they're sensing their parent or caregiver or teacher coming unglued, it's already doing something inside of them that's going, danger, danger, danger. And the more dysregulated the adult is, the more it's feeding that inside of them.
Right.
So it's crucial for the adult to stay in control, for the adult to keep themselves at a regulated emotion when they're dealing with it. Because if you start yelling or telling them don't do this or don't do that, you're just already filling up their anxiety bucket.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was this article you wrote in the AACCE News about the need to grieve. Can you talk about that?
When I was kind of in the throes of this, and Dr. H. Norman Wright was speaking, and it was just overall about grief. He had a special needs child, and he was talking about grieving the losses of the normal childhood. And he simply said, you know, death is not the only loss. Loss is loss. Loss
yes.
of dreams, loss of hope, loss of a loved one. And that was so freeing to me. I can't tell you how many teachers or people at school have said, your daughter or you are the real deal. You have to be a Christian. We're in public school.
Wow.
And one of the teachers called me and said, your daughter, I can tell you've worked with her, but you can look in her eyes and you know that Jesus is there. She's the real deal.
Mm.
And that's the biggest yeah. compliment.
Stephanie, this has been great. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Gosh, it's gone so fast.
That's right.
I'd love for you to come back, and thank you so much for your time, and God bless you and your work with this.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.